This episode is dedicated to the Marines and sailors who are affected by the actions in Afghanistan and Kabul, the ones who are wounded, and the ones who made the ultimate sacrifice. You will never be forgotten. Semper Fi, do or die.
Yeah, I'm trying to get. Let me see this. Hold on.
Yeah, take your time. Take your time.
Do I sound like I'm away from the mic right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now do I sound like I'm way closer?
Sound like a late night radio.
Here,
let's. Are you hearing that?
We got you.
You're hearing the tapping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure my mic was being used because it didn't ask me what I wanted to use for audio, and usually it does.
I might use this whole thing in a promotion because that was great. That was a good testament.
Dude, I run my own podcast, so I like.
Oh snap!
I'm not gonna. Here we go. Yeah, all right, there it is. It's all set up. I checked my preferences.
So Josh, why you had to bring the expert podcaster onto my like episode 2 podcast, bro? Thanks a lot, man.
I show you how it's done.
Josh is the with people who study networks. Josh has become the connector. He is the person who puts people in touch with the people they need to meet. That's how he rolls.
Yeah, I just gotta figure out a way to monetize that.
You make a podcast and you get people on your podcast to talk.
I gotta figure out how did Jeffrey Epstein make his money. That's what I gotta figure out.
I don't know. Are you sure it wasn't legitimate?
Yeah,
bro.
Yeah. Let's. All right. Well, hey, welcome to the Network. Left or right, maybe straight, I'll make a path of my own, never known from before, you know kicking that door tomorrow. I know it ain't promised, but we're here today, y'all, we're here today. Welcome to episode 2 of the Network Nights podcast. I am your host in full effect, Leaf Israel, coming to you again on another Sunday to give you another great conversation between three now good friends. We leveled up from last week with one. Now we got two people joining me today. My first guest is Josh Emerson. Josh Emerson is a Naval Academy graduate from the class of 14 who grew up in a Navy home. After graduation, he became a Marine Corps infantry officer. After completing 5 years in the Marine Corps, he moved to China to study Mandarin and Kung Fu. Upon completion of a 6-month immersion program, he returned to the U.S. and started Tracer franchising. My second guest joining us will be John McCarthy. John McCarthy completed his undergraduate degree in sociology at Quinnipiac University in 2012. Following graduation, he commissioned as an officer in the Marine Corps and served as a weapons platoon commander and action officer in the Pentagon, directly supporting the efforts of 2-star generals. John obtained a master's in business administration from the George Washington School of Business with a focus on innovation of technology and investment and portfolio analysis in 2019. John has worked as a digital strategy and management consultant for 2 years and is currently following his passion of helping veterans go into business for themselves to become their own boss and pursue financial freedom. Today's conversation will be focused on Tracer franchising and the ins and outs of the franchise world. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Today I got the most wonderful two people in the world that could join me on this podcast, Network Nights Episode 2. That is Joshua Emerson. All right, here we go. Josh Emerson. And I also got John McCarthy here. What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
Good. What's going on, please?
Hey, we're good, John. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Cleef. Thanks for having us on the show. I'm really excited to talk about awesome stuff today.
Yo, see Josh is what I'm talking about. He's already doing it. So
he's an expert.
I'll plug in already. John has a podcast already, y'all. So Josh brought him on here to show me up. All right. So you can already tell just the way he started off, he's ready.
But the thing is, I wake up like this every day. Like if you talk to my wife, she gets real irritated. Like I go to bed this way. Okay. I'm just like, it's all or nothing the whole day. So hey, that's how I operate.
That's what you gotta do though. That's what you gotta do. I mean, I don't know. Josh probably calmed down now. Yeah, Josh got a beard. he calmed down, so he's probably already in his old man mode. You got your cane over there, Josh?
I mean, see, it's like the Hulk, right? People are like, oh, he's calmed down. No, he's just figured out a secret. He's always angry.
That's a great analogy.
That's a spirit animal, the Hulk. That is a spirit animal.
I love to spend.
What question is, what are y'all drinking? What y'all drinking today? John, you take it first.
So I'm a huge fan of good coffee, but I also am simultaneously very cheap. So I purchase all my coffee at Trader Joe's, and they also have an awesome selection. So I'm drinking Black Acres small lot blend from Trader Joe's right now. First time trying it. Big fan. Definitely enjoying it. Got it just for this podcast to start it out. So I'm ready to roll with my Black Acres from Trader Joe's. Costs $8.99 for, I think, 12 ounces. It's a great deal.
Wow. Hey, you know, I'm going to have to go check that out. I thought Trader Joe's was like overhyped for a second because the people kept saying it was like expensive and stuff. And then I went there and it really wasn't bad. It really wasn't.
So if this was a finance podcast, I could go into all kinds of stuff about Trader Joe's, but I actually, so doing like my budget monthly, I save $1,000 a month shopping at Trader Joe's compared to the other areas in my town.
All right. So episode 3 will be the financial podcast.
There it is. But yeah, for a family of 4, it's $1,000 a month in our finances if we shop at Trader Joe's.
Yeah, I'm going to get you offline, man. I'm going to get that scheme. But yeah. Josh, all right. What are you drinking, Josh?
Yeah, so I'm also a fan of coffee, but I am not as sophisticated as John over there. I'm more of a outputs and inputs kind of guy, right? So I'm getting Folgers, and I'm inputs. And I'm getting out the warm feeling of having caffeine running through my veins.
What's the best part of waking up?
It's getting to work on
Folgers in your cup,
bro. You're supposed to sing it. Come on, I wanted some harmony. I wanted something that you knew what it was too.
Oh, I know what you wanted.
Part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Come on. We all know it.
What Josh didn't touch on, though, is like he drinks in the morning out of a cup that's like as big as your head. Like it's the most gigantic cup ever. And he just like is slurping on it at like 7 a.m. It's so like so obnoxious, but it gets him ready for the day.
Oh, yeah. That's jet fuel. 100% jet fuel.
Have y'all seen the Detroit Lions head coach? He was talking about his coffee routine, and he gets like, what's the biggest size you can get from Starbucks? I'm not familiar at all.
I don't know. I tell him large. Grande? I can't remember that stuff.
It's bigger than a grande. It's ridiculous, right? But he gets that cold brew with like like two espresso shots in there, and that's how he starts his day.
That's what I'm talking about. That's nuts. That guy is ready for anything.
I'll send it to y'all after this. I literally had a breakdown and go, he's not going to live long. Like, that's just, come on, man. That's just too much in your heart. But all right. Awesome. Great coffee. All right. I got my, white zombie white ale. It's a Charlotte, homebrew. So I think, I don't know. Charlotte got some good, actually Asheville got the best. I don't know if you're a brewski type of guy, but it has the best freaking beer, on this side, I think of the East Coast. I mean, that could be argued, but it's really good. It's really good. I think I had it one time in a store and I was like, I got to take this. So I took it home. So it was pretty good. So I already did y'all introductions before this, but Josh wanted to switch it up. I think in an email, Josh, he said you want to talk about your love language, right? I've never seen that in email. You said your love language.
That was supposed to be just a conversation between me and you, please.
Oh,
gotcha. You know, that's something that I figured might be able to strengthen our bonds here. Yeah. I want to know how to make you happy, please.
All right, I'm done. Oh, man. All right. Anyway, moving on. First question up for y'all. Let's start with y'all beginnings. Growing up in your shoes, what was it like for y'all?
Growing up was interesting for me. My dad was in the Navy, so I lived in Florida, then Georgia, then Florida, and then Puerto Rico, and then Alabama, and then back to Florida. So it was fun moving. I like meeting lots of different people, learning different cultures, you know, really kind of embedding with the locals, if you can use that in a civilian sense, and getting to know, you know, just how different people live. I think that's really kind of shaped me, where I appreciate each region for what it has, and individuals for what makes them unique. So that was a major part of my childhood.
All right. So you just kind of laid out, talking to Brandon last week, you laid out a very, very unique experience, just like he did, right? You got to move around the country for so, you know, long, and to see so many different cultures, different types of people, et cetera, et cetera. How do you think that sets you apart from, like, I guess, other people not living those experiences at your age?
Yeah, I think the first thing is just made me very versatile, I guess, where I could plug into any place with any type of person, just make friends, quickly kind of figure out what's going on and find success within that, that unique environment. And so that allowed me, I think, success, you know, going off to college in a new place, when in the Marine Corps, constantly going to different, countries. And then, you know, I lived in China for 6 months afterwards. And then I've just been kind of bebopping around.
So you went from growing up military family, military household, shortly after that, of course, you went to the United States Naval Academy. And then after that, you did your time as a, you know, platoon commander in the United States Marine Corps, as an infantry officer. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Training. Yeah, that's right. So infantry officer training. So we finish up. I go to Camp Lejeune, Camp Lejeune for some of y'all out there. And I am a platoon commander at 1-8. We go to Spain, do a special purpose MAGTAF, focused on North Africa as a crisis response force. Basically what that means is I sat on next to an airfield for 6 months or 7 months. And that's about it. Fine.
I'm gonna edit that out. I swear. I might not. We'll see.
So yeah.
Too raw, right? Too raw. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so get back, go to another UDP. Love Okinawa. Love, you know, do some time in Korea, Japan, Taiwan. Man, that was a great trip. And then I get back, and I knew I was going to have the Marine Corps, right? So they're calling me. They're like, you got a year left in your contract. What do you want to do? And I was like, whatever you're having the hardest time filling, send me to do that, because that's going to be sweet. And I thought I was going to go do some, like, you know, something in Afghanistan or Iraq or something like that. That some, you know, people are married. They want to go do it for a year. And I got sent to work at the embassy in Jordan, in Amman, Jordan. And it was like the most awesome time ever. And I was one of two Marines in charge of all logistics and administration for any Marines in the country of Jordan. I wore a suit every day. I lived out in town in the nicest part of the country. They gave me a car. They gave me several cars, actually. I had to have a bulletproof car. I rode around a bulletproof G-Wagon. It was insane.
So everybody, if you're keeping up, I think the best part of Josh's military career was this final tour, because he's definitely.
I love Jordan. Alhamdulillah. anyway, so I get out, and I got out with a contract in hand to do Teach for America, where they take non-teachers and they put them into struggling schools in inner cities in America, right? So I got assigned to Miami, Florida, teach ninth grade math. And I'm getting out of the Marine Corps, and I tell them, hey, I need a year to, like, decompress, right? I don't want to deal with kids right now. And they're like, yep, that's fair. And ever since I was a little kid, I've been watching these Jackie Chan movies. And I was like, I've done martial arts, and I want to do Kung Fu in China, right? So I'm looking up Kung Fu schools and all this stuff. And I realized in Jordan, I fought Muay Thai and MMA, but I couldn't speak any Arabic. I was like, that was so stupid, right? Why didn't I learn Arabic?
You did.
So,
you did, though. You tried.
Yeah.
Well, I was in class with you. I was in class with you. Yeah. I saw you every day.
Yep. And you watched me struggle. But when you're immersed in it, it's a lot better, right? And I realized that. So I said, all right, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go to China. I'm gonna study. That's gonna be my main practice. And I'm gonna find a kung fu master out in town. which is what I did. So I learned Mandarin for 6 months, and I had a Wing Chun Kung Fu master that I took classes from. And I just, you know, hung out and learned Mandarin and Kung Fu for 6 months. It was awesome.
Can you like legit speak Mandarin now? Like still?
I am out of practice, but by the time I finished, I was up in Beijing having full conversations with cabbies and stuff. So, it was a big help. I had a couple of close friends in China who forced me to practice. Even though they could speak English, after a certain point, they just refused to speak English to me. They're like, nope, you're here to speak Chinese, so that's what you're going to do now. And I was like,
that will get you right. Yeah, that's impressive, though. Yeah. That's really impressive.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun time. So I get back. My plan was to keep traveling, right? I was going to go back to China for a couple months. I was going to visit my family in the Caribbean. I was going to visit friends across the States. Mm-hmm. So I'm on this, you know, I went to a wedding. I was planning traveling in the northern United States for a little bit. And COVID happened, right? So I'm hearing from my friends back in China of these lockdowns. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to happen in America. I didn't even have a car. I sold my car. I sold everything. I had a backpack. Mm-hmm. And so I go home and I like knock on my parents' door. I'm like, you guys remember me? I was like, I gotta figure things out for a little bit. So, you know, I did that for like 2 days and I was like, man, I'm bored. So I started Tracer Consulting and I was like, I gotta figure out how to make like what business to start up, knowing that I'm going to teach in like 4 months. Mm-hmm. Or go to teacher training in 4 months.
Okay, so let me paint the what year is it? It's 2020.
This is 2020.
Okay,
this is 2020. January 2020.
During 2020, you just got back from China. You're speaking Mandarin. You're a kung fu master. You know you're doing it. You get back, you're in your parents' house 2 days. You're like, I can't take this anymore. I got to get out of here. Right.
Yeah, I got to do
there,
something.
From got to do something. From there, you said, I'm teaching in a couple months, but I got to do something else that's going to bring some bread home. Tracer franchising. How does that spark? Where does that spark come from in that situation for you to create that?
Yeah. So the first business, I was looking at a startup, right? And it was going to be fish farming, because where my parents live is the number one fish farming place in the United States. It's Central Florida. And it's very easy. I can tell you all about tilapia and why they're the perfect fish.
Episode 10.
Yeah. But anyway, so I realized that with a startup, there's just too much that you have to figure out. I didn't have the time to do that. I needed a shortcut. I needed something I knew that I could count on. And I needed someone to train me and I needed somebody to support me. So I started looking up franchising. So that's what that is, right? Mm-hmm. And a franchise consultant contacted me and I told him what I needed and what I had and all this stuff. He made some pretty terrible suggestions that I said no to. And then he's like, well, you could do what I do. And I was like, yeah, probably could.
probably could do it better.
And so franchise consulting, it's not a franchise, but it's a business opportunity, right? So they train you and they give you a small level of support every month for a fee. But it's not controlled. So if you fail, they don't really care. Like a franchise does care about that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh yeah, whatever. Like this works for me. This is what this guy says is only available. And I trusted him to an extent. So I did it. Right. So I start scaling this business. I go through the training. Mm-hmm. I start up, it's called Tracer Consulting, but underneath I do business as Tracer Franchising, for the franchise side. I've got some other, ventures that I do as well under Tracer Consulting. Mm-hmm. And Tracer Franchising, what I realized at first, it was just, it was Tracer, for those not can't see me, I have red hair. And at IOC,
we're going to put your headshot will be in the promo. So yeah, they'll see the redness. They'll see.
Oh it. Yeah. Flourish. Yeah. And back then I had hair on the top of my head, which I don't have anymore. I used to be able to run fast. Can't really do that either. But anyway, so I'd be running around and then the instructor said I look like a tracer round, which is a round that burns red so that you can see it at night, right? That's what we use it for. So they started calling me Tracer. So I was like, man, that's a cool name. So I've got Tracer consulting with a red lightning bolt in the background of the logo, right? So that's what that is.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
And so, so, you know, I realized in business, you can't just go after everybody, which is what I was doing. I was buying leads. I was calling leads, talking to them. It was going okay. And I realized you got to niche down, right? And I made my niche veterans, right? And then I niched down again which was Service Academy veterans. I was using that network. And now I've been able to use that to learn everything I need to learn. I've, you know, really figured out how to match people, how to interview people, how to properly use their personality assessment, and stayed laser focused on Service Academy veterans to the point where now I felt comfortable extending my purview to all veterans. But I don't want to, you still want to keep your niche, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not really interested in going outside of the veteran community in terms of who I match with, or who I work with on the franchising side. That's how things got started. I did start teaching for a semester. It was the first semester during COVID. I love the kids. They remind me of my Marines. I love math, right? So teaching math to ninth graders was great. But what I didn't love, Teach for America, I felt had a very certain agenda that if you didn't agree with that, I didn't really feel very welcome. And then the administration in the school, there are just things I weren't happy with. Right. And I was like, I got this business. It's growing on the side. I can teach whenever I want. Schools aren't going anywhere. Right.
Yeah.
But now's the perfect time for me to get into business and to grow it. So in this November, December timeframe of 2020, I focused 100% on franchise consulting. Did well. It's been growing. And that allowed me to bring John here onto the team. He's been doing a great job and allowed me to start looking into other ventures that I've looked into. Yeah.
All right, Josh, we'll come back to you because we're kind of skipping over John here. John,
yeah.
Growing up in your shoes, what was it like?
So I grew up in Ocean Township, New Jersey, which is right outside of Asbury Park. That's where Bruce Springsteen is from. That's what I always tell people. And then I actually played a lot of sports in high school, and then I got too many concussions, so I had to stop playing contact sports. And so I started getting really involved in like TV productions, and I was a sports broadcaster on the local public access channel.
Whoa.
And then I was trying to go through with that. So I went to Quinnipiac University for journalism, for broadcast journalism. But since I was 12 years old, I always wanted to be a Marine. And my father kind of talked me out of it because he wanted me to go to college. I was the first one in his family to go to college. So it was like a big deal for him. And so I went to college. I kind of felt like I lost my path. And my sophomore year, I changed my major to sociology. And then I started pursuing going into the Marine Corps. I went to Officers Candidate School, PLC. I was not one of you Academy grads. I got to have fun in college, but I also I had a lot of catching up to do by the time I got to TBS. And so I went and did that. And I actually was also an air contract. So I went down to flight school in Pensacola, Florida, washed out of flight school. And then I redesignated into the infantry, graduated IOC, took command of a weapons platoon in
John,
second battalion, second Marines.
Real quick, I think it's so cool. Like when we had the pilots who washed out and they were called Fallen Angels.
Yeah.
I was like,
I'm a fallen angel.
I was like, wait, they're calling Fallen Angels? That's like, usually people are like, oh man, you know, it didn't work out. That was like, that sounds cool. That sounds cool to me. I'll be a fallen angel. But yeah, that was like the only time I was like, man, that's like, that's actually a cool nickname to have if you redesignate from being a pilot over to you know, infantry or whatever.
You know who the most famous fallen angel is?
I feel like
Chesty Puller.
Oh,
Chesty Puller was a fallen angel. So that was like the thing at flight school. Like when you washed out, they'd be like, hey, it happened to Chesty and he was the best Marine that ever lived. And you're like, cool. But very few guys leave flight school and go to IOC. Fortunately, myself and one other individual, we redesignated, got in. You have to go up for a special board. They have to assess you and see if you can get in. They look through all your stuff from TBS. And so we got in, took over a weapons platoon in 2nd Battalion, 2nd Marines, did a Operation Eager Line, did a UDP, came back, worked at the Pentagon for two star generals.
What does UDP stand for?
It's Unit Deployment Program, and it's actually, they don't even refer to it as that anymore. There's a new, I think it's like Deployed Force and Readiness is the new term.
Give it 3 years. Yeah. We'll change the name. But yeah, I never went on UDP. So I always called it UDP, and I was like, I don't know what that means, but gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Appreciate that.
Unit Deployment Program. And then at the Pentagon, I made the decision that I was going to start a family. So I decided I was getting out of the Marine Corps, and I started going to night school at George Washington University School of Business, got an MBA with a focus on investment portfolio analysis and innovation and technology. Started doing some IT modernization work for Booz Allen Hamilton. And then now I've been helping Josh with placing veterans and franchises.
Dope. Wow, man. That was, John, you got a lot. I mean, Booz Allen itself, we have, when I was starting getting out and I was working at the Marine Expeditionary Force, the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force unit, at that staff level, we had so many Booz Allen Hamilton contractors there who were either, you know, they were kind of affiliated with the military or, you know, just knew a heck of a lot about it. And those guys and gals were smart, man. I mean, just dedicated people who were just focused on, you give them one, hey, we got a problem with this, and they would work on it nonstop till either they came up with like 3 or 4 different COAs, courses of actions for us to actually try out. So big up. I mean, I heard it's very difficult to actually get into Booz Allen Hamilton. So definitely big ups for all that, man. That's crazy. That's great.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's a good organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And with that, we'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Hey, you. Are you a transitioning service member? Or have you already transitioned, but your current job, it's just not doing it for you? Working too many hours? Ceilings on your salary? Lack of purpose? If this fits you, I have a great opportunity for you to take advantage of. Tracer Franchising. Tracer Franchising is a recruitment firm with an inventory of over 500 franchises. Yes, 500. They get to know the veteran and match them to the best fit franchise that will work with them and their situation. Through a 3-month research process, they offer expert opinions on franchises, provide funding referrals, guidance on what to look for, what to ask, and much, much, much more. What are you waiting for? Reach out to the guys from Tracer Franchising, Josh Emerson, John McCarthy, and start your new career today. You can find all the details of Tracer Franchising in the show notes. And now, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that commercial break, because it was good for us. Anyway, Josh, great, great points that you're making there, especially just following us through the timeline and showing us how you actually got into this, you know, from graduating and getting out of the Marine Corps, really just went, hey, I'm gonna try this, I'm gonna try this, I'm gonna try that. With that being said, John, you know, perfect introduction. How do you fall into this pot? Like, how did you fall into this niche? I know after you left the Marine Corps, you were doing other things. How did you get into franchising as well?
Yeah. So when I was getting contacted by all kinds of people asking me if I was interested in starting a franchise, and they were random people on LinkedIn, and I was just kind of stiff-arming them left and right, stiff-arming them. And then one day I see on Josh's LinkedIn profile that that's what he does. So I called him up and I was like, Josh, tell me about this franchise thing. Like, why am I getting contacted about this? And I think like most young guys who get out, especially junior military officers, when you get out of the military, and I see this across services from a lot of guys, you think there's like a few standard routes. Some guys, they just go straight into starting their own business. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I think that population is very small. And if they do, it's from what I see, it's like a mom and pop shop, right? Mm-hmm. Or there's a family business or something like that. But a lot of us go get an MBA, just like I did, and then we go into a Fortune 500 company, which is awesome. Nothing wrong with that. And so what I found very frequently was that I had different veterans reaching out to me and asking for help on how to do certain things, right? Like, how do I get into a Fortune 500 company? Or even before that, right? There's a lot of insecurity from a lot of vets when they get out. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't know what to do. I'm freaking out. I EAS in 6 months, right? And I'm scared. And it, It makes sense. This is the first time in your life where there isn't somebody who's telling you where to go, when you have to be there, what you're going to wear, right? All of the knowns are now becoming unknowns. And if you have mouths to feed, if you have mouths to feed, this is even scarier, right? And the thing that attracted me to what Josh was doing is that Josh has always said it's about helping the veteran, right? It's not about the franchises. It's not about, you know, putting people into different jobs or anything like that. It's just about setting these guys and gals up for success. And that is kind of like when I was on the phone with him, asking him what he was doing, he wasn't like, oh, I sell franchises. He's like, I give veterans the ability to go into business for themselves. And one of the things that like I've said to Josh is, you know, and Josh has said this to me, he's like, if they want to go into a Fortune 500 company, I have a network where I can put them into that. Right. And so he never hesitates to push people the right way. And I also have that kind of network, but I know because like when I got out of the Marine Corps, I was very insecure, unsure of what I was going to do when I got into the civilian world. I thought to myself, because I was getting an MBA, I had all kinds of startup entrepreneurs coming to talk to me about what they were doing, what they were working on, showing us how to pitch venture capitalists and stuff. And I would get out there and talk to them and I'd say like, hey, how many hours are you putting in a week right now for your job? They'd be like 60 to 80, sometimes 100. And I was like, that's not why I'm leaving the Marine Corps.
Real quick, John. Right? It's funny because on the last podcast, talking to Brandon Carter, he's a good friend of Josh and I. He also graduated from the academy, so he's a boat schooler, but he's still in, right, over at NPS, Naval Postgraduate School, and he has about 4 to 5 business endeavors that he's doing on the side. And I brought that up. I was like, hey, when you look at Magic Johnson, the other business moguls who, you know, they claim they're putting in 60, 80, sometimes 100 hours a week for their passion, for their craft, sometimes that gets stuck as an entrepreneur. That gets stuck as... I wouldn't say as, you know, the elite, that gets stuck as the norm. You have to put that much time in. So setting boundaries, what type of boundaries did you set for yourself? Especially, you know, as you saw all these people were doing 80 to 100 hours. What did you look at that? And how did you say, I want to be an entrepreneur, but I don't want to put those hours in?
Yeah, so I didn't. I said, like, I'm going to a Fortune 500 company where I can walk in at 9 o'clock, start working in at 5. I walk out. I did that because I wanted to start a family. If I wanted to work 100 hours a week, I could have stayed in the infantry and taken company command, and I would have done that. I maybe even would have worked more. But then, you know, working, it was like, okay, what do I need to do to get promoted? And they're like, well, you got to do X, Y, and Z. And next thing you know, John's working 60 to 80 hours a week. And then the discussion was with myself, it's like, well, then if I'm going to do this, why don't I just do this for me? Right. And so it kind of came full circle because it's like you meet a lot of veterans who think like I'm going to go to a Fortune 500 company where it's safe, where I have a safety net and everything's good. But in the end, you could start to work for yourself and eventually start to get what I like to call is discretionary time. You start to build up something that you can leave for future generations if you build it up enough. And the other thing that Josh kind of was talking to me about that really sold me on placing veterans in franchises is their success rate as opposed to startups. Right. And so that's why not to say
why is the veteran success rate? And Josh, of course, this is kind of now open. John's making some great points here. Why is the success rate with veterans in franchises so high compared to, I don't know the other, categories there are of people, but you know, why is that?
Well, so go ahead, Josh.
Actually, I was going to I'm going to hit just franchise in general, and then John, I'm going to let you talk about veterans. So franchising in general gives you a business plan that's been proven to work, right? So you don't start franchising when you have something that works. You start franchising as a business when you have something that's not going to fail, right? And then if you have a great franchisor, then that's even doubled. And then you do it, right? And most of these veterans, they want something that's proven, right? They're not there to be on the ground level of something because they would just go to a startup if that's what they wanted. So, and that's really something I preach to them. I say, hey guys, right? I've got franchises with 5 locations open, but why look at those? Let's look at some that have 100, 200, 1,000 locations open, right? Let's look at those because we know that those work. We know you can call people who have been and done the exact same thing you did before starting the franchise and ask them what they did to be successful, right? We know any problem that you are about to encounter, somebody else has encountered that. You can just call them up, right? Once franchisees or other owners of the same franchise, they're like family, right? You have a problem, you call the guy who's the next territory over, and he's going to tell you how he solved that problem, and it's done, mm-hmm. and you do it, right? That's why franchises have such high success rates. And it's mm-hmm. very, people are like, oh, what's the success rate of a franchise? It's like, well, you know, let's do it by franchise. Because there are some franchises where the whole system's collapse, right? And there are some franchises that I can point to that have never had a single failure, okay? So let's look at it that way. Let's not look at it as franchises as a whole, because within each franchise, right, you've got dozens of industries. Mm-hmm. So there are franchising in general is a fantastic system as long as you work the system. And then I'll let John talk about why it's good, especially for veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got to my first company, my company commander sat down with me and he said, John, you're never going to be as prepared for any job in your life as you are right now to be a platoon commander. The infantry officer course has set you up for the greatest amount of success. You've received more training than you ever will for another job in your life. When I got into the civilian world, I remember thinking like, wow, I just rolled up and they just said, here's your job. Let's go. Right. And if mm-hmm. you talk to different recruiters, and this is something, what no matter what you do, if you're a vet getting out, I encourage you to ask people when you're interviewing, like, hey, what kind of training am I going to receive to prepare me to be as successful as possible for this role? Very frequently, you don't get a whole lot. It might be like in my case, it was a 1-day orientation. In other cases, it's 1 week. But a veteran is somebody who, if you give them an SOP, they're really good at following it. Right? They know how to follow a standard operating procedure. Well, this is what a franchise does. They hand you the playbook. They say, hey, this is what we've done. This is what works. We've tested it. It's proven. And we also are going to be your backbone of support. If you're starting a brand new startup, you still have a high opportunity for success. That's absolutely true. But that backbone for support doesn't necessarily exist there. Now, for veterans, they're really good at working a system. You show up, you say, hey, how does this work? Okay, cool. You learn it as fast as possible. And then you start to execute on that system, right? This mm-hmm. is what we have been trained to do, especially junior military officers and then our staff NCOs in the Marine Corps. These are people who are very good at saying, what is the system? How do I execute? Okay, you've mm-hmm. given me the tools. I'm going to go out and be successful.
And it's interesting because I think what I've seen from the Marine Corps, you know, myself being a Marine, we're a jack of all trades. And I know some Marines will get yes. down on themselves about that because it's like, oh man, you know, we don't specialize in anything. We kind of have a little, especially infantry, you have a little bit of taste of calm, a little taste of this. You have to have a little taste of everything in case something happens. And while the other services can have, even the special forces, they can have dedicated personnel to calm, to medical, to UAV operating, et cetera, et cetera. And I know, you know, that was something that I guess what I've seen in the Marine, in the infantry, there was a, man, I wish we had more specialists. But as you're saying, John, you know, being, hey, here's something you need to learn. They learn it, and now you can be successful in that system. That's the Marine Corps in a nutshell. You know, you can't specialize in everything, but if you can be a generalist in a lot of things, you'll have a lot of success. So it's kind of funny. I won't say funny. It's very interesting you saying this because it's like, huh, here's something that you can take the Marine Corps can, that has molded you, and take that and push it into a whole nother endeavor, such as franchising, and have great success compared to the other, compared to the numbers.
And I'm really happy that you just made that point, because there's another thing that with this that I want to get out to any veteran who's getting out of the military to make very clear to them. And mm-hmm. I have this conversation very frequently, especially with infantry guys. All right. I wrote an article on LinkedIn about this because there was a staff NCO who said, like, what hard skills does an mm-hmm. infantry Marine have to bring to the workforce? Okay. And I was so fired up by that question, because when you sit down with recruiters, we sit down with hiring managers, they will say that to you. They'll say, like, hey, because you look at them, you're like, I'm really good at leading. Right. And they, mm-hmm. and then they look at you and they go, that's awesome. Like, I don't even know what that means, because they haven't had a need for leadership, right? They don't understand that. They call it a soft skill. My argument is that you are an expert at those soft skills. That is your hard skill. That is your tactical advantage against the other people coming into the workforce, right? And so you understand how to communicate. You understand how to build a plan and how to execute on said plan. You understand what it takes to get it over the goal line, right? You have been taught that in your entire career, it doesn't matter how hard you work. If you don't take the machine gun bunker, you lost, right? Mm-hmm. That is what we are taught when we're in the infantry. So this is a really huge thing. Now, we expand that out to all of the veteran community. These are people that if they have a skill set to say, okay, what do I need to learn to be successful at my job to support the bigger picture or to support myself? If you go into management consulting or a lot of these industries, they always say they want people who are agile learners. Well, let me tell you something. If there's an area where people are agile learners, where they will rapidly pick up skills, I do believe that it is in the military, because it is not a matter of earning more income or increasing revenue. It's a matter of life and death. If you are not able to learn quickly, somebody next to you might not come home, and nobody mm-hmm. wants to put their head on the pillow knowing that they were responsible for that. So yeah. I always say that these men and women who come out, they need to have that confidence that, hey, I promise you, if you were remotely good at your job in the military, you can come out and do amazing things out here in the civilian world. And franchising is just a model where we can set you up to have financial freedom, where you can have some discretionary time, where you can be kind of your own boss. Mm-hmm. And Josh, I'll let Josh jump in here, but he has a thing that he always says. He's like, you don't buy a McDonald's because you love flipping burgers, right? You don't do, like, I'm not like, oh man, I just really love milkshakes and hamburgers, so I want to own a McDonald's. Mm-hmm. You buy a McDonald's because you want to run a company that's going to give you an opportunity to be the CEO, to step outside of it, have some discretionary time, and maybe potentially leave a legacy to your family that they can then carry on.
Mm-hmm. Josh, yeah. I know you had some input there.
Yeah. And the other part is, right, franchising gives you a ton of training, right? So it's not like it's on the job training. There's dedicated training that they're going to provide for you, right? And then the other reason, I don't know if people have ever asked themselves this, why would a company choose to franchise as opposed to open up their own corporate locations, right? Like Walmart. And the number one reason is because that franchise, its edge over the contractors in that location is that the person who runs it really cares, right? Customer service is definitely something that can differentiate a franchise from anything else. And it's free, mm-hmm. but unless you have someone who's there who cares, right? Who really cares. And the only person who's going to care like that is an owner. You're just not going to get it, mm-hmm. right? You're just not going to get it. And so that's why it's so powerful. And so you need leadership, right? You have to be a leader. You have to be somebody who can motivate your employees, mm-hmm. right? If you run a junk hauling business and a moving business, right? Moving boxes around isn't intrinsically motivating. But if you love where you work and you love the culture, you're going to show up, you're going to smile at your customers, you're going to move their stuff, you're not going to break their things, right? And that's what makes a great moving company. And that's what mm-hmm. makes a great, you know, XYZ company. And so that's really why it's so important to have these owners with these great leadership skills, which is what veterans have, okay? Mm-hmm. And a lot of veterans, you know, John mentioned McDonald's. That's $1 million franchise. Their franchise
How much? I think I heard
$1 million.
It costs $1 million to open a McDonald's.
You have to have a net worth of $1 million.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I misspoke here. Your net worth has to be of $1 million.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it for a while. I know those things. Mm-hmm. It might be higher now. But yeah, so if you're not a millionaire, you're not going to open a McDonald's.
What if you? Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. The price goes up, right? The price goes up as the company does better. It makes sense.
Yeah, that's just who they want, right? That's just mm-hmm. who they want. So, these franchises, right? A lot of people know that, and they're like, "Oh, I'm not a millionaire, so I can't own a franchise." Well, there are tons of franchises that are not that, and there's some great SBA backed loans. Like, there's VA backed loans. But these are SBA backed loans for businesses where you can put 10-15% down, and they'll fund the rest of it, right? So these businesses are a lot closer, and they're a lot more within the reach of veterans than I think they realize.
All right, y'all. The gloves are off, okay? I figured y'all out. Y'all been saying all this great stuff about franchise this, franchise that, and the leadership, and me. I got something for y'all. What are the negatives of franchising? What are the possible downfalls, right? Because, again, here are the positives. And Josh and John, I can attest. I was in talks with a franchise consultant when I was getting out as well. And the numbers make sense. The environment makes sense. It does make a lot of sense. But what are the negatives? What are the drawbacks that make somebody say, I have to weigh this pros and cons list now?
There's a couple, but they aren't negatives that you are free from anywhere else. And they are, at the end of the night, if you fail, it's only on your shoulders. Now, here's a beautiful thing. You're used to that. You come from a community. If you're a veteran, you come from a community where you take 100% accountability for your actions. So that's nothing new to you. The other conversation that I think needs to be said is, like, there's no, no, I'm doing quotation marks, but there's no safety net, right? People say that, if I'm in a big Fortune 500 company, I don't have a chance of losing my job. That's not true. You know, you do also have a chance of losing your job. A Fortune 500 company can lay you off. They can experience major issues. We've been fortunate as a society that in the response to COVID-19, we really didn't fall into a recession, right? Mm-hmm. But if we did, we might have seen the opposite of what happened with a lot of these major companies. And that could have resulted in a brand new, situation. Now, again, depression. That can happen in franchising. You can be in an industry that didn't do well during COVID. The funny thing, I remember when I started learning about franchises, I was talking to Josh and he was telling me about an individual that he had that he just sold a gym franchise to. And my first thought was, wow, what a horrible time to go into the fitness industry during COVID-19.
Yes.
But here's the beauty of it. That individual, his franchise backed him through the entire process. They halted his opening. And Josh, give me the numbers. I think he sold like 200 memberships before he's even opened his doors. That might be an exaggeration, but he sold.
You're talking about, you're talking about the one, during the pandemic. Yeah. So he pre-sold, he's about to open. He's going to pre-sell more than enough memberships to break even the day his doors open.
Right. And so this is an industry and I have friends that don't own franchises, but they own gyms. And I don't know that they didn't have a major corporate backbone to fall on when the pandemic hit. They only could go to getting bailouts and things like that. And they had to start going to the mattresses, if you will, and that's not an easy thing. So the negatives are, you at the end of the day, you got to look yourself in the mirror. And if you don't make it, it's on you, but it's, but that also will happen no matter where you are. And I would say the other negative, and then Josh add in here, but is that if it's on you and things don't go well, you're open to this, to the downfalls that exist all over the market. And that's, there's no safety net for that anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Josh, you got something to add?
Yeah, I'm going to add two more things to it. The first one is it takes a while to start up a business. Right. So I don't have any family, and I had I spent over 2 years overseas of my 4 years in the fleet. Right. So, had deployment money, wasn't spending it, didn't have a house, didn't have, anything to spend it on. So I had a something I could live off of, right, to get until this business got going. However, there are ways to get loans where you pay a manager a salary. Guess what? You're the manager. You're not paying yourself six figures, but you're paying yourself enough to get by until your business starts performing. Right. Mm-hmm. So there are ways around it. But people will say, I was making X amount in the military. I need to make X amount the day I get out. And it's why? So you can make that for the next 20 years with a 5-8% increase every year. Why not grow it exponentially to the place where you actually want it within 2 or 3 years or 4 years or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I would say, it's health insurance, right? People are like, I need health insurance. It's like, okay, well, there's actually an open market of health insurance. Sure. You work with a CPA that I can refer you to that does this because he works with business owners, right? Everyone who owns a business, you think they all don't have health insurance, right? There are ways around it. And there's specific tax exempt vehicles that business owners utilize in order to mitigate the cost of their own health insurance, right? So there are answers to everything, right? You just got to ask the questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think y'all both are touching on the at the end of the day, the person has to make a choice. And John and Josh, you guys have, I would say, polar opposites in regards to your personal lives, right? John married. You have kids, you said you do have kids.
Two children. One's 2 years old. The other's 5 months old.
Okay. So John's going through it right now. All right. I just became an uncle last month, and I have not met my nephew yet, but he likes to poop a lot. And I think that's, I'm realizing what this actually means. So John's going through it. Josh is, you know, again, the opposite spectrum going through what I'm not going to talk. He lives next to Miami, y'all. So I'm just going to put that out. I'm just going to say that he's in vicinity of Miami, which is the East Coast Vegas.
He wears all white Adidas jumpsuits and plays tennis with big, big sunglasses on his head. It's hysterical.
He has double polos with the collar popped. That's how he is right now. But no, y'all are living such different lifestyles, and I think it's just interesting and fascinating that you can have both y'all come together at this one intersection point and have success in this realm when, again, different personalities, different lifestyles are coming together. So I think that's awesome. I've heard of a franchise fee included with franchising. Can you touch on that, John?
Yeah. So there are royalties that you're required to pay back to the franchise that are based off of the revenue that your company earns. The reason that they're based off of revenue for any of my like financial gurus is because if you're looking at a balance sheet for a business, you know, there are areas where you can send money so that it doesn't exactly show on your bottom line, you know, net income. But revenue is something you can't really fake the funk on. Mm-hmm. So they take a percentage of revenue to ensure that they're earning the appropriate amount that they can receive. So they receive those royalties based on revenue, but it's a percentage of your revenue, right? So it's tied to your success. Their success is tied to your success. And then any other fees or requirements or anything that you have to pay, you know, it's our job to make that very clear to you, right? We have our interests are tied to your interests, right? Like we've said throughout this entire episode, we very much want to set you up for success. If we think that we are not able to do so, we're going to tell you that, right? We're going to say, hey, we don't know that this is the right avenue for you to go down. But every step of the way, it is all very clear what is required from you financially. And Josh and I take a vested interest in ensuring that you get what you need to be successful financially. Because in the end, if you don't have the resources available to be able to, you know, pay for whatever you're going to purchase or purchase the franchise that you need, that we're unsuccessful then. So our goal is to make sure that before we even get to discovery day, before we even start to put you on validation calls, you see every line item of what is going to be expected of you in terms of paying for the franchise.
Understand. I don't think people can ask for anything more, you know, transparency in any business. I would say moving into, you know, as we get older and companies continue, I think transparency is the name of the game. So as y'all are building your franchise, you're building your companies and you're building other endeavors, episode 25, we'll get into that. But as you guys are building, I love the fact that you are building on a transparency foundation, because that's going to allow everybody to say, hey, they got no tricks up their sleeves. They're not trying to weasel me out of something. It's, hey, they're building a trust, they're building a bond with people, with anybody. And I think that's just I think corporations are finding out the hard way now, but you guys are already ahead of the game, which is awesome. You guys touch on the positives, right? You gave me some negatives and I appreciate that. Keeping it 100 with everybody here. So let's get into it. Let's just get into it. Hey, I'm Khalif. I show up at your doorstep. People don't do this anymore, but I DM you online. There we go. I DM you and I'm like, hey, Josh, hey, John, I want to get into franchising. Walk me. I mean, you don't have to give me the whole background, but walk me kind of through the process of it. And, you know, how do I get into it? How do I timeline of getting over the hump of, you know, getting information and clearances and then actually going in, you know, opening day, as you mentioned before, like kind of walk me through that process.
So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to send you a personality assessment. And that's because we want to learn who you are as a person. We want to see what makes you tick, because that ties into the type of franchises that we want to match you with. And this assesses you on whether or not you're an innovator, for example, and you want to work in like a small franchise that doesn't have a ton of locations, or you're one of those people who likes to work in like an empire that has maybe 100 to 200 plus locations opened up, and all kinds of other specific things that make you tick.
So off from the bat, you're actually getting a personalized experience. That's awesome. You're off the bat, you're getting a personalized experience for that individual.
So Josh has worked really hard on this process. And to just touch on what you said before, we have completely different backgrounds, but the one thing that's universal, not backgrounds, but situations in life currently, the one thing that matters most to Josh and I is, and this sounds cheesy, but it's really true, is we would just want to set veterans up for success. That's really it. Like, we just want to place veterans in a position where they can be very successful. And if that means that the franchise industry is, you know, an industry within franchising is not correct for them, we make it very clear to them that we believe that. And we do what we can then at that point to hand them off to an individual who will take them down the path they want to go. But getting back into this process, we do a personality assessment, and then we do an upfront interview where we just go through everything we can and we dig pretty deep. It's an hour to an hour and a half long interview where we're asking questions about time, money, energy, the resources that you have at your disposal so that you're able to go through this process. From there, we take the information we gain from that interview.
Let me interject real quick. Because this is something that's, you know, near and dear to my heart. You know, like I said, I drink, you know, the cheapest coffee because all I care about is the goal, right? Yeah. Goals are everything to me and to John, right? We want to know what is your goal, right? That's what he means when he says, maybe this isn't right for you. Mm-hmm. We're making that distinction by fleshing out exactly what your goals are, right? What do you want your life to look like 1 year from now, 3 years from now, 5, 10 years, right? What do you want your legacy to be? What is your, not just business goals, what about personal goals? What is your time? How is that being spent? Right. So it's very, very thorough. And if we say there's no way you're going to get to these goals through franchising isn't right for you. Right. Mm-hmm. We need to drive towards what's right for you. And we do that by knowing what your goals are, what you want your life to look like in the future.
Awesome. Like that. Okay.
So from there, you know, that is specifically what we dig deep on. And we ask like some very serious questions. You know, if you hit the lottery tomorrow, what would you do? And that helps us to flush out like what your dreams actually are. Right. And it's a hypothetical situation, but it helps us to really dig deep. Mm-hmm. And then from there, after we have all of our information, one of the other things we usually ask for is who are the other key players who are going to participate in this decision-making process, because we also want them to come to the table. Mm-hmm. Every veteran who's married knows that their wife or their spouse has a say in what's going to happen next, right? At least if they have a healthy marriage, right? So if that happens, we ask them to come to the table as well and to sit down and to talk with us so that we can answer their questions. Mm-hmm. But from that first interview, what we do is we go back and we take all the information we've gained, and we match our candidates to 4 to 6 franchises based on the information that we have. And then we come back for another call and we present them these franchises and we say, look, these are your 4 to 6 franchises that we've chosen, and these are the industries that they're in. And we've previously assessed what industries you want to work in, right? So if let's say you're one of those people who just has zero interest in ever opening a gym, because we're still on that concept. Well, we're not going to present you a gym then, even if you match it perfectly. You said that is a no-go, so we're not going to present it to you. We present those 4 to 6 options. We show them to you and we go through them. From there, generally, we ask you to pick 1 to 3, right? And then we will ask you to do what are called validation calls. And on these validation calls, you're actually calling current owners of franchises, right? And in the middle of that process, the franchise is also going to be reaching out to you, right? And you're going to be talking with the specific franchise headquarters. And in those times, you are able to do two things. When you're talking to specific franchise owners, you can ask them the really tough questions. Hey, I see that, you know, the franchise has this average return. Why is that? You know, what locations do really well? What locations do poorly? And the beauty of that is a lot of these franchise owners are pretty honest. They're like, hey, you know, we're doing this really well. We're not doing this so well. This is where I get a lot of support. This is where I need more support. Mm-hmm. And it helps you to make a really informed decision. At the same time, you're going through talking with the actual franchise headquarters, who's assessing whether or not you're a good fit for their corporation or for their organization. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you eventually will make a decision based on the one that you like the most to go to a validation day or a, what's the term? I'm blanking on discovery it right
day.
Now, Josh.
Or meet the team discovery day. There's a bunch of different terms. Yeah.
And so you'll go to a discovery day, and this is where you actually go and sit down with the franchise and they go through everything with you. It's been very virtual now because of the pandemic, of course. But mm-hmm. you're sitting down with them. You're learning as much as you can. You're asking even more in-depth questions, but they're also assessing you to see if you're a good fit. And then from there, if you decide that you have found the right franchise, it's the perfect one, it's met all of your needs, you're going to move forward and go through with that franchise. Mm-hmm. The things I haven't mentioned is that through the entire process, Josh and I are checking in with you. We're asking you, hey, how's this going? If there is a certain issue that you're not getting enough information on from your validation calls or from your talks with the franchise, we're reaching out to find that, the people who can give you that information and put you in touch with those people. Simultaneously, we're putting you in touch with CPAs, right? Certified public accountants, who are going to help mm-hmm. you with if you are going to underwrite a loan. They're going to be the ones that are going to help you with that. If you're going to start going through that process, we're setting you up with that. If there's an attorney that you need to meet with, who's going to help you out, that's an individual that we're going to put you in touch with. The other thing that happens is you're given an FDD, financial disclosure document. And in that is where you're going to see the majority of the items that are going to give you the most information possible about your potential new franchise. And we go through that document with you as well to find out what additional questions you have. We help you to ask those questions to the right people. And then if you're still not getting that information, we continue to do so by putting you in touch with the right people.
Mm. Altogether, it's about 3 months, right? Yep. So it's very thorough. Nobody's pushing anybody into a franchise. It's totally non-committal, no pressure. So it's more like a education process. Because mm-hmm. you can't make a decision until you have all the right information, right?
Right, right.
So we're not going to ask you to make a decision early on. We're going to, okay, here's a little bit more information. Still like it? Here's some more information. Still like mm-hmm. it? Here's some validation calls. Still like it? Here's a discovery day, mm-hmm. right? And the only reason, right, at some point you have to make a decision because you either have to do it or not do it. And that's about 3 months in after the discovery day. And, you know, you'll also talk to funny experts and that kind of thing. So really it's just something that I personally think John thinks it's a great opportunity for veterans. And so they shouldn't feel like they need to be 100% to talk to us. You can't be 100% until you have all the information. Mm-hmm. Even then, you know, you'll probably only ever be 90 or 95% because it's totally new.
You touched on, man, I remember I was at the Service Academy conference. Sorry, John, this is a boat school thing. It was it's a conference though where I think it's a job fair where, you know, you have Army, West Point, Air Force Academy, the Naval Academy, Coast Guard Academy, people going to these conferences, these job fairs. And they had a spiel on franchising there. And I guess, you know, they kind of hit the big questions. Something that was very interesting, they had a Army Apache pilot who retired, and he's talking about his franchises. He has a couple. He has maybe two or three, and he's bald-headed dude, but he had a franchise and it was like a hair styling place. And all his friends were like this. What do you know about that? He's like, I don't know anything. And that's the beauty of it. And he actually mentioned that because he's like, you know, if you're a mechanic and you open up a mechanic franchise, you might not agree with how that company does certain things or certain practices because you have your own personal opinion or your own personal experience. But actually going to a franchise you have no knowledge about or you're not specialized in, you get to absorb all the information that that corporation gives to you and you follow that plan, that model. So it was just really interesting when I was looking at that, hearing this, and it's like, whoa, hold on. So you can really get somebody who has zero information about a subject or a service, and that person can flourish in this environment. It was, you know, again, it's hard to find the negatives here. In order to start this process, right? You said, hey, just conversate, talk to you, talk to John. Hey, I'm interested in a franchise. What would stop me? What are the roadblocks? You know, I know, you know, it takes money to make money, right? So I guess what would be some other roadblocks? I know financially something there, but what other roadblocks would you say could stop or halt this process?
Yeah. So let's go. I'm going to do the three that I like to talk about: time, money, and energy. Right. Mm-hmm. So one, time. You need the time to do the research. If you don't do the research and it's 3 months later and they're asking you to sign the agreement, you're going to say no because you don't know everything that you should know, right? So you need to be able to do 2 to 4 hours per franchise that you're looking at for months, right? So that you can do the research. And then once afterwards, you tell us, do you want to do this semi-passively? It's probably how that guy started, because a lot of haircut places are semi-passive, so you can keep your job and do 10 to 20 hours a week. Or, you know, do you want to be full time? That's something we asked during the interview, right? So, but anyway, you'll launch into that, whatever that time commitment is, once you're done, right? So, if you're okay quitting your job or taking this full time, then you'll be doing it full time. If you want to do it semi-passively, you'll do it semi-passively. And then money. So there's three buckets, I like to say, of the franchises. You have home-based franchises that are usually under 150,000, and you're doing right about 15% cash down. So you can do the math there, because I'm not a mathematician. Then those are home based. Maybe you got a couple of trucks. Maybe you're doing things on Zoom. You know, you're maybe doing subcontractors. Maybe this is junk hauling and moving, or home restoration, or it's those budget blinds or something like that. Or you're doing flooring and you're hiring subcontractors. There are a lot of options. I don't want you people to think there aren't options. There's tons. Senior care, pet care. There's a lot of things that you can do with these home-based businesses. Sales. Mm-hmm. And then there's what I would say above 150 up to about 300,000. Those are either very large home-based businesses in terms of heavy equipment, right? Like tree cutting businesses, stuff like that. Or it'll have a small build out, right? A small gym, small restaurant, something with a small retail location. And then you have over 300,000 up to $1 million, which is a larger location, be a large restaurant, a large retail place, a large gym.
Mm-hmm. In all three of those scenarios, are you putting down 15%? So, you know, is that standard across the board, regardless of what level you're at, the kind of three different tiers?
Actually, on the larger loans, you do what's called a SBA 7A loan. And that is 10% down typically. Mm-hmm. If you were to buy the real estate, you could use an SBA 504 loan, and that's 5%. That's just for the real estate, though.
I understand.
But all of these require personal guarantees, mm-hmm. Just so people are aware. So that's the money side. And then lastly is the energy, right? And when I say energy, I mean emotional energy, right? And what that calls for is you have to be able to take the leap, and that takes a certain amount of emotional energy. People, especially after coming out of the military, maybe your friends and family all had corporate jobs, they're going to think you're nuts, right? They're going to tell you that. And it's going to be stressful. And you're going to go to sleep thinking about the franchise. You're going to wake up thinking about the franchise. And it's going to be life-changing, right? Do you have the emotional energy and resilience it takes to say, I'm going to go do something that really is something that I've never done before, right? It's the unknown. You've worked for the man before, right? You know what that's like. There's no emotional barrier there, although it has a lot of the same risks as starting a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy, right? So do you have the emotional tolerance, the energy to overcome that and to leap and get into business ownership? So those are the three major roadblocks, right? Time, money, and energy.
I like Barney style. I mean, this is what I've heard. You guys are the experts, so you can confirm or deny this. But I did hear that when you get to a certain level, I would say tier two of investing or opening a franchise, I think you mentioned it was a personal
guarantee.
Personal guarantee. I did hear that when you start getting above like 200,000, you're putting up assets in regards to a security blanket to show that, you know, you're actually in this for real. Is there any truth to that, or is that something?
So a personal guarantee means that if the business goes sideways, you're going to have to make up the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So although, yeah, so it's, there's not like a single, you're not putting your house up for collateral, but they can take your house, right? It's a personal guarantee. Unless you can set it up in different entities. We're not going to end that. So yeah, right. That makes people nervous. And a lot of times, because it's bank approved, although the SBA is backing it, they're going to have net worth requirements. So there are certain franchises. That's why we asked that question in the interview, is what is your net worth? We've got a net worth calculator.
Spreadsheet.
Yeah. Calculator. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Cause a lot of people don't know how to calculate that properly. So there are franchises that have net worth requirements, and we are going to make sure that you meet that. We're not going to show you any franchise that you don't meet that threshold for.
Mm. Okay.
Good question.
Okay. I think my whole thing, right? Cause I'm the naive, hey, I've seen some things, I heard some things, but especially, you know, y'all are the experts here, you know, and this is the perfect opportunity for y'all to just kind of push that out. Hey, this is what we mean, being full transparency. This is what we mean by this statement. Because one, I think people, one, it just builds that trust, but two, people just understand exactly, you know, the risk involved, but also the opportunities.
Yeah. So I was skeptical, right? Like, so it's good that you ask these questions too, because whenever you get into this conversation, everybody's meeting you with skepticism, because they think at times, like, it sounds too good to be true. Like, you're telling me that you're going to give me an opportunity to start my own business. You're going to help me to find funding, and then it's going to all go perfectly. Right. And that's a tough thing to swallow. And the response that Josh always has is, it's going to go well if you work the system. Right. And I agree with that. But something that Josh handed to me to read, and so if you're one of those people, if you're like, I want to do my own homework, I want to learn a little bit more about this, which veterans naturally do. They want to go out and figure it out on their own. There's a book, I believe it's by Michael Gerber, I think is his name. It's called The E-Myth. I recommend you get the version E-Myth Revisited. And all he does is go through a concept that you and I touched on earlier, which is the thought of the entrepreneur who is working 80 to 100 hour weeks. They're ripping their hair out. They have this beautiful idea. Then they get into it. And then they realize that, like, even though the example he uses is, if you're a baker, right, you're really good at baking, your whole family is encouraging you to open up a bakery. So you're really good at baking, you open up a bakery, but you're not really good at being a manager of other employees. So you're struggling with that. And then you're not really good at balancing your books. So you're struggling with that. And the next thing you know, you're working as much as possible. And this pipe dream of opening your own company becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And this book goes through all of the requirements that any business owner, franchise or not, would have to be successful. But then the book takes a beautiful turn where it goes into the concept that Ray Kroc embraced when he started the McDonald's franchise. And it was not on the thought of starting, you know, he didn't just care about getting burgers everywhere. He cared about giving people an opportunity to start their own businesses and giving them a model that they could work and that they could execute on, that they would be successful. So that's a book that I really recommend. If you're still one of those people who's like, I'm interested, but I don't know, it sounds too good to be true, read that book. You'll understand the concept behind franchising that makes it more appealing than just going out on your own. But that doesn't mean that you can't do that, because it is, I have plenty of friends who are startup entrepreneurs who are doing very well. You know, I have others who are still in their infant stages and working through it, but there's a reason that franchising has got a little bit more of a backbone, and that book really helps you go through it. So I recommend The E-Myth Revisited. Check that out. You can listen to it on audiobook. It's a good book.
Good shout out. And I think you touched on the back end. It's not saying that one process is right, one process is wrong. You know, it's not. We this podcast, and I think all the conversations that we have had, this is not about, hey, this is the path you need to take. But this is, you have to make a decision on what path you do want to take. So if the opportunity comes where you can have a business, but you can be semi-passive, which I didn't know that. You can be semi-passive where you work your job and have a franchise. Oh, now you know. Now you can take advantage of it. So that self-knowledge and that self buildup of what you learn about the whole entire process in the system can allow that person now to make educated decisions, which is great. I want to ask both of y'all a question. You know, we're getting to the wrap up time here now. Sad y'all got to go. But if you could, you know, put a PSA, public service announcement, for anybody in the world, and it's like, hey, we're doing this, we're doing that, we need to meet this person. You know, what type of person would that be? What skills, what traits would that person have that you would want to network with next?
I think for me, It's something that I've kind of stolen from what Josh is already executing on. And it's, I want to meet anybody else who wants to help veterans. Okay. So if you have time, money, or energy that you want to give to veterans, we want to meet you. Okay. If you have a corporation that wants to hire veterans, we want to meet you. If you want to provide funding to support veterans, we want to meet you. If you, whatever it is, you know, if you just want to help veterans with their resumes, we want to meet you. We care about that, because in the end, that really is like the why for why we're here, right? A man can withstand anyhow as long as he knows his why. That's the Nietzsche quote, right? So why we do this, why we allocate our time, money, and energy to this endeavor is because we genuinely care about helping transitioning veterans or veterans who've been out for 20 years to get what they want in life, because we think that that is a really good group to provide that to. That doesn't take away from other individuals. You know, there are other populations that also need that assistance. We like to work with them as well and support them. But in the end, if you're one of those people who's really working hard to assist veterans in their transition or in transitions from careers later in life, we want to meet you. We want to just talk with you, see what you're doing, and hear from you so that we can utilize you and we can help you and you can help us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Josh, what you got?
Yeah, I think I would echo that. People who are helping veterans in transition as well, I think so many people just don't realize that franchising is within the grasp of veterans, right? So someone who already has the ear of veterans and who people already come to assist with transition, let's talk, right? Let's talk. And let's see if we can become a resource that you refer those veterans to. And if we can do something for you, right? Because I don't just want to ask, right? I want to give as well. But just getting this word out to as many people as possible that franchising is a phenomenal opportunity. You're a business owner. You're working for yourself. And we want to give the confidence to veterans that they can do it and that they're more than qualified to do it.
Solid answers from both of you gentlemen. Wow. I'm at a loss of words because John, I mean, you know, I can only imagine how you were in college, man. I can only imagine, right? I think we don't need to imagine. We can all just put that behind us, right? But I had the pleasure of seeing Josh go through college. You know, 2014 coming up, we're coming up on a 10-year reunion slowly and surely. But I think it's just amazing seeing the growth one with you, Josh. But John, I mean, man, you know, you're far past us in terms of the personal life and the professional life, man. So big ups, big shout outs to both you gentlemen for one, just being awesome. Two, taking the time to talk to me today. You know, this is still episode two, obviously going through some growing pains. John, don't critique me too much. All right. I know you, John's setup is immaculate. Y'all, if y'all can see this, he got the blurred out background. So all we see is him, you know, you got the mic, he got the perfect angle too. It's got some lighting. I can tell he's serious about his, man.
Okay. So I've taken this from other groups and it's called the financial triangle. Okay. And at the base of this triangle is the source of all of your wealth for your whole life. Right. So what do you think is at the base? Where does all your wealth come from?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you, please.
Oh, snap. I wasn't ready. Well, you can't ask the interview person the questions. It doesn't work that way.
Things just flipped.
Okay. Hold on. Let me get my... All right. So where does the base of your wealth come from? That was a question?
Yeah. In the financial triangle, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of how you build wealth, mm-hmm. What's at the base of that triangle?
Investments? Income?
No. It's you. Right? It's your efforts, your knowledge, your network. Those are the things that are going to create the base of all of your future financial earnings, mm-hmm. right? It's you. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, right, comes, there are only two things that provide what I'm about to tell you, right? The four pillars of wealth: appreciation, cash flow, tax benefits, and leverage, right? Those are the four pillars of wealth building.
Write that down.
There's only two things in the world that provide those four things. Mm-hmm. What are they?
All right, come on. Don't do this.
No,
come on.
Just give me the good. You messed up the first question.
I don't know. I have no clue.
It's real estate and it's business. Gotcha. Okay. It's real estate and business. Those two things, you can use leverage. They'll provide you appreciation, provide you cash flow, provide you tax benefits. Okay. The problem with both of those things is that although they're supposed to sit on top of the base, right? As you grow, they can outgrow the base, right? And you can imagine a pyramid where the base is smaller than what's on top of it. It's going to fall, right? Well, with a franchise, they're constantly training you and giving you ongoing support. So that business, or excuse me, that base, which is you, is expanding as that next layer expands as well, right? Mm-hmm. So that way the base will always be bigger, will always be able to support that thing that's built on top of it, right? And that's something that startups don't have, where your business can grow too quick and it'll fall because you personally can't handle it. That's not going to happen in a franchise because you're creating that strong base, right? So that's the last thing I want to mention. There are other things that go above it, right? You start getting the more traditional types of investing, and at the very tip or the untraditional, you know, if you're going for Dogecoin or whatever. But you can become supremely wealthy with simply a strong base, and then those four pillars, which is real estate and businesses, right? And that's something that people will struggle to do unless they're trained to do it. And that's part of trained and supported. And that's part of franchising.
Mm-hmm. So Josh, what are some specific opportunities for veterans in franchising?
Yeah. So besides things that we've spoken about, right, the dozens of industries that startups they can do, there are a few other models that I don't think veterans or even I was aware of when I got going. Right. And it's resales. So I was reached out today or yesterday by a person who loves veterans. They have a cash flowing business and that they want a veteran to take over, and they would finance the business from seller financing. So what that means is you don't go to a bank, you don't take on debt to a bank or anything like that. The seller will 100% just say, okay, this is how much the business is worth right now. Pay it to me over these many years from the profits and just take the business, right? You can literally take over a business for free. It doesn't happen all the time, but I can tell you that opportunities like that or similar to that come across Trace Consulting's desk not infrequently. So veterans who maybe are looking for that route as well. And even if it's not that, resales are, if they're a successful resale, are more fundable in some cases than startups, right? So let's say we're looking at startups and it's not going your way, but let's look at some resales, right? You're obviously limited by what's available for resale. So it's a little bit more limited than startups, but that's another opportunity that veterans need to be aware of.
And shout out to, I got a friend, Josh, you know him, his name is Rich Jordan. And hey, man, that's what he went out there and that's what he did. He pretty much, he took over a plumbing company. Should have wrote it down. Of course, this is all from the head. So I can't remember the company name, but it's out in New Jersey. And yeah, it was from an older guy who wanted to sell it off. I think he bought it. I'm not sure how he acquired it, what acquisition style he used. But at the end of the day, he actually took that business and all he did was add a millennial or, you know, new age feel to it. So he got his plumbers tablets, right? He got them. He was able to innovate them or innovate the company via Google reviews. And he added that knowledge that we grew up with. And now that we dominate in this area, he added that. And they were all like, oh, it's like a breath of fresh air, right? And that's just the nature of business, right? The dinosaurs go. And if you don't either pass it off or keep being, you know, keep thinking of different ways to innovate, you end up like Blockbuster, you know, simple as that.
Yep. But, 100%.
Yeah. Shout out to Rich Jordan, man. I know you're still killing out there.
Yeah.
All right, gents. One last question. Do y'all have any resources that veterans can take advantage of?
Yeah. So if you're interested in franchising, I'm going to start there. Tracer has an e-course, right? A free e-course you can sign up for, as well as an ebook. Just ask for it. We'll send it to you. Then there's a company called Vet to CEO. They offer a free five week training for veterans that are interested in owning a business. They'll teach you about startups, franchises, and acquisitions. It's a great course. I've actually went through it twice just to process the information. There's Syracuse University. They offer free entrepreneurial classes to veterans. And I mean, there's just, I mean, there's a whole gang of books I can refer people to. So any type of, it's all out there, right? There's government federal contracting academies I can refer people to. So any type of business people want to get into, there's free resources out there. And I highly recommend people to stop by the Trades Consulting website, LinkedIn page, or reach out to me or John. We'll be happy to push those your way.
But with that, John, how about you sign us off, man? Do you anybody you want to shout out? Anybody you want to put, give a big ups to?
Yeah. Oh, nice background there, Josh. Josh just changed his consulting background up. Yeah, if you want to check out, it doesn't have anything to do with this stuff, right? We don't talk about business stuff, but I also have a podcast called the Postmodern Patriot Podcast. And we talk about, there's a segment that we run with called Tough Talk. It's with another infantry officer. His name's Isaac Wyant. He's in his final year at Harvard Law. He's a great guy. He was a 81's platoon commander in 7th Marines. And we talk about pretty much all the difficult concepts. We're actually getting ready to record tonight a response to what's going on in Afghanistan. So difficult things to talk about that we try to have measured conversations about because we believe that the American public has lost the ability to have tough talks. So if you want to check that out, we're on everywhere you listen to podcasts. So it's the Postmodern Patriot Podcast, anywhere you listen to podcasts.
When is it dropped? I want to hear that. I want to hear that one for tonight.
That one will drop. It'll drop. I don't know when this airs, but it will drop on August. It'll drop on August 18th.
August 18th. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Awesome, man. Awesome. Oh, sorry. I cut you off. Can please continue.
Yeah. And then, but getting back into, the reason why we're here today, reach out to Josh or I. We're going to give our LinkedIns to Khalif to put in the show notes and just reach out to us about anything that we talked about today, whether it's being interested in helping veterans or actually pursuing the franchise model. Tracer Consulting has its own page on LinkedIn that you can check out as well if you just kind of want to follow us in the background. I would encourage you not to do that. Just reach out and let us know you're there. We're not like super salesy where we're just going to be dogging you all day. If you reach out to us, we are just going to be here. We just want to know who's in the background, who's in the wings. And that's an area where Josh is always updating things. And we're keeping people aware of what we're working on.
Awesome. Awesome. And yeah, Josh, I do like the background. I did not mean to call. I didn't want me to big up John and that mean I diminished your background. Okay. Your background looked really nice too. All right. I just noticed the blurred out. But Josh got the logo up right now. He's fully representing here. Okay. Is there anybody you want to shout out at this time?
I always give a shout out whenever I start this to Scott Mackis over at the Service Academy Business Mastermind, supporting all veterans in business. Because he's the one who really helped me plan out my business and make the pivot into veterans and helping me create the mindset that I needed to be successful in business. So big shout out to Scott. Everyone should check out his website, sabmgroup.com. And that's it for me. Khalif, I really appreciate you having me on the show. We go way back, and I had to mention this, everybody. In Khalif's background is a present I gave him for his wedding. So Khalif, as much as you might deny it, Khalif loves me. All right. So
Josh, you're breaking up there. You're breaking up.
Hey,
gents, blessings, blessings, blessings. Thank y'all so much for providing all that knowledge on today's episode. John, I'm going to check your podcast out, man. All right. I got to hear from the master. Okay.
I appreciate it, brother. It's been a pleasure to be on the show.
Oh, yeah. Josh, thank you again as well, man, for introducing me to John, continuing the network. See what we're doing here? You get it?
Of course.
Oh, man. All right, y'all. Y'all be good. We're signing off from here from night, Network Nights. Be easy. Hope you enjoy your Sunday. Catch up on some errands. Read a book or something. Or just do nothing. Whatever. Peace.
I know it ain't promised, but back home made my mama promise I would make it through these hard times regardless. But these hard times are heartless. Did I make a mistake? Asking myself, do I have what it takes? Or will it all come crashing right down on me? Can't get out of my head or my heart off my sleeve. Am
my heart needs to sleep and my eyes need to see something that tells me my dreams meant for me. Something that tells me my dreams meant for me. Please God, I need a sign, cause you know these eyes are tied. And you said I'm your design, but right now it feels like there's no you and I. Right now feels like you ignoring my cries when you see me out here and I'm barely surviving. How I'm supposed to believe in your timing? Seems like when I'm seeking your guidance, you hide it. Did I make a mistake? Asking myself, do I have what it takes? Will it all come crashing right down on me? Can't get out of my head or my heart off my sleeve. I'm just lost and frustrated. Feels like that I'm never gonna make it. But I know that's a lie. I know the battle is all in my mind. Cause sometimes I lose my way. But I know I'm okay.